Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us again, and we really appreciate you tuning in and sharing our show with your friends, family, and neighbors. Today is December 27th, 2016. It's 8 a.m. in the morning, and we are joined again with a friend of our show, and I'm really honored to have her with her, Donna Gilmore of SanOnofreSafety.org. Thanks, Donna, for joining us. Hello, Donna? Oh dear, I'm going to give her a little call back, folks. Well, not unlike what we've been through before in the last few weeks with the old Skype. So let's get her back on, because you know what they say, persistence pays, perseverance, success through perseverance. So let us get her back on the air. And this seems to be something that the old NSA is doing to us on a regular basis now, but we can cope with it and bring her back in. Let's see if she can get in. Hold on just one second. Donna Gilmore. Okay, hold on.
Oh, this is Donna.
Hi, Donna. This is Lonnie.
Hi. Should we get disconnected? Or?
I think we did, because I didn't hear you. As soon as the show started, you went away. And I have to say that the old Skype venue's been doing that lately. I don't know if it's the old NSA not wanting us on the air, but whatever. We're persistent. So thank you for joining us. I really appreciate you sharing your time with us here.
Thanks for having me.
Really. So why don't you update our listeners as to the activities that you've been involved in, because you're very active and engaged in keeping these people accountable and making sure that they don't completely destroy our planet.
Well, I wish I had that kind of power to stop them from destroying the planet. So all I can do is share information and try and get it to the right people so they do the right thing. I just want to make a general statement. What I've learned in my quest at the San Onofre to stop them from buying more thin wall canisters that even the NRC admits can crack and leak in the short term, I've learned that the people in position of power and influence have no idea of how nuclear waste is being stored in the United States. I absolutely have no idea. You know, who's going to tell them? I even met with the former chairman of the NRC, McFarland, who considers herself a waste expert. And she was not aware that these mostly half-inch thick stainless steel canisters that they store a Chernobyl's worth of radiation in each one of these. She was not aware you couldn't even inspect the outside of these canisters. So when Allison McFarland, yeah, she did not know.
Wow.
I was face to face with her. She had come down to Southern California and made a presentation at one of Southern California Edison's public meetings, and I could tell from her presentation that she didn't know the facts about the waste, because she was saying that it was safely stored. And at the break, I was able to have a one-on-one conversation with her, and I said, well, you know, these thin wall canisters can't even be inspected on the outside. And she looked at me with this puzzled look on her face, and she says, what are you talking about? I said, well, you know, well, with the thick wall casts that they use in most of the rest of the world, those you can get close to. And then I saw the light bulb go off in her head, and she says, oh, that's right, because they're thin, they have to stay inside the concrete overpass, so there would be no way to even inspect the outside. It's like the light bulb went off, you know. And she was in charge. She was responsible for approving storage of every single container for storage and transport for all kinds of nuclear waste. And she did not know this.
Now, do you think the new guy Burns knows?
I think that this information is purposely being kept from the decision makers, all right? Mark Lombard, who is the director of spent fuel management at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, I have watched him attempt to hide this information. It'd be like pulling teeth to get him to admit in a public forum that you can't even inspect these things. And he knows about the cracking issues, that he knows that these canisters are all susceptible to cracks. And he knows that once a crack starts, it can grow through the wall of the canister in about 16 years. I mean, I have that being admitted in writing by the NRC, but he does not share this information willingly, and he will try and skirt around it. So I doubt that Chairman McFarland was not aware of this or did not believe this. I had sent her an email prior to her coming down to speak. And when I introduced myself to her, she said, oh, thank you for your email, you know. But she didn't say she'd read it. She didn't say she agreed with it. She obviously either didn't read it or believe it, because until I spoke to her, and what I'm finding, it's taking a face-to-face, one-on-one conversation with people like her for them to get it. And this is what I'm learning, because I have sent written information in the past to her and to others, but that doesn't seem to work. I also met with John Kotek, who is leading the effort at the Department of Energy for this interim consolidated storage project. And when I spoke to him face-to-face, it was obvious that he did not know these canisters cannot be inspected on the outside, let alone the inside. You know, obviously they can't be inspected on the inside because they welded the thing shut and they never look inside. That's a whole other issue.
Wow.
I met with him and his chief nuclear deputy, who is a nuclear engineer, formerly worked on submarines. When I told him that these couldn't be inspected, even on the outside, he said that can't be true because they have to be, and he kept repeating that over and over again. See, these people truly have not been given that information at their level.
Wow.
And John Kotek reports directly to Secretary Moniz. So if Kotek doesn't know this, Moniz doesn't know it, and Moniz doesn't know it, you can bet Obama doesn't know it.
Wow.
Or Hillary, or Donald Trump, or Bloomberg, or anybody in a position that could change the way waste is stored in the United States. So what I'm finding is I haven't gotten high enough up in the chain to affect change. The people that, you know, who's going to tell them? Who are they going to believe? For some reason, I managed to get these people to believe me, maybe because my evidence is 100% NRC documents, so it's like they kind of have to believe the NRC documents. But I seem to be able to have these conversations and be believed. Now, what they do about it is another story, but given this Trump election, I think I would like to have an audience with either Donald Trump or maybe his daughter or son-in-law or somebody high enough up that that could deal with this issue, because I am sure that he and his family and others have no idea about how close we are to having Chernobyl cans exploding across this country, holding the most deadly man-made nuclear waste, on the planet. I don't think any of them know. The vendor, Dr. Singh, the Holtec vendor, Chris Singh, I mean, he makes presentations saying, oh, these will last 300 years, no problem. I mean, he says these things, but there's no backup. And the data, the evidence, the solid evidence supports that the opposite is true. We'll be lucky if they last 20 years. The NRC, in one of their technical meetings that I listened into and asked questions at, they said the Coburg nuclear plant in South Africa had a comparable container. It wasn't holding spent fuel, but the NRC considered it comparable to our containers that are holding spent fuel. It leaked in 17 years, and the cracks were deeper than the thickness of our canisters. Most of our canisters are only a half inch thick. And the cracks, some of the cracks were thicker than that. And so they don't want that information shared. They are going out of their way to avoid that information. And that is kind of information that we need to get out to the people that are in a position of power and influence to do something about this. The rest of the world uses thick wall cast, 10 to almost 20 inches thick. And here we're sitting with half inch thick canisters.
Oh my God. Why are the people inside of our regulatory agencies, supporting and encouraging, it's really lying. They're lying to our elected officials, the people who make the decisions. Why are they lying?
Well, if you want to get a promotion at the NRC, you better play nice with the nuclear industry. The kind of people that are going to make it into management, for the most part, have to go along with the nuclear industry. That's just the culture there.
Yes, but why would the nuclear industry? I mean, this is a catastrophic event that could destroy their industry.
Here's what I see. I've spoken to, the president of one of these companies that makes this these inferior canisters. I've spoken to the head of San Onofre, one of the executives that manages a small number of them, to NRC people, to DOE people, to employees at various levels at nuclear facilities. And what I find is the common thread is they believe in unsubstantiated hope. I mean, and they're so in love with nuclear energy. The best analogy I can come up with, if you had somebody that you've fallen in love with, or say a friend fallen in love with somebody, and that person is really bad for them, but that person is going to rationalize everything wrong with that person because they're so in love with them, and they're just going to ignore their flaws. It's really a bad love relationship is what this is. And they're willing to ignore data that doesn't fit what they want to believe. And Mark Lombard, the NRC deputy, says, Donna, I don't know why you worry so much. If something happens, they'll figure it out. They always figure it out.
It's the battered wife syndrome.
So I said to Mark, I said, well, Mark, what about Hanford in Washington? That thing's got, you know, ongoing problems with leaking tanks. They've got military wastes in liquid form leaking into the Columbia River. You know, what do you mean they always figure it out? And he goes, oh, well, that's the Department of Energy. We do a better job than they do. I mean, it's total.
As if
I studied Hanford. They've got the same similar problems. It's different kind of containers, but this is what they have in common with the ones we're using, with these thin wall stainless steel canisters we're using. They're made out of metal. They're thin metal, thin wall metal. They cannot be monitored until after they leak radiation. They cannot be fully inspected. I mean, the same, you know, in a car, would you buy a car that you couldn't inspect, that you couldn't maintain, that had no warning system before some critical part was going to fail? You know, would you buy that car? I mean, this is what we're taking our family on a ride in these canisters that have these flaws, but nobody really knows it, that can really do something about it, you know. And the people that are in charge, they're delusional, there's some that know the truth, but because of their job, they're going to keep their mouth shut. You know, you can get blackballed, not just in the job you're in, but the word gets out, you'll have trouble getting a job anywhere in the industry. So I've run into this a number of times with material engineers who were shocked to find out that we're storing these canisters by the ocean, where they've known salt corrodes metal. And they were shocked to know we were storing nuclear waste in thin canisters by the ocean, but they won't speak out. You know, they end up doing work for these companies that make these containers. So they're not willing to speak out. This is what I've run into. There's also the problem with the anti-nuclear community and leaders. They were not aware of the problems with these canisters. The only reason I knew is because I listened in to an NRC technical meeting in July 14, 2014, and another one August 5th, 2014, where the NRC was talking to the nuclear industry about these problems and trying to figure out what they're going to do about it. If I had not have listened into that meeting — most people don't listen into those meetings, even though they're public — I would not know this information. It's not something that you're going to readily find. I mean, you can find it on my website, Sanofi for Safety. I've gone through and put links to the government documents and other documents on this. And so I was in Chicago recently at a nuclear summit and was able to educate, you know, about 100 anti-nuclear leaders around the country, and even some in Canada, about the situation on these canisters. Most of them were not aware of this, you know. So that was good. Unfortunately, while I was in Chicago, the Illinois voted to bail out two nuclear plants in Illinois. Well, you know, allow these old aging plants
that are
to continue
leaking.
Operating. Yeah. And the thing is, you know what people don't know about this? They don't know that these plants were designed for a 40-year lifespan, and most of them aren't even lasting that long, and that there's critical parts of those plants that can't even be inspected. So they will not know until after they fail, you know. So, but I doubt anybody making these decisions even knows that, you know. That was information I found listening into another NRC meeting about, because they're wanting to extend the licenses even longer for these old plants. And the NRC was brainstorming, well, what are we going to do about these parts that we can't inspect? Oh, well, maybe we can assume that if the part we see is good, we can assume what we don't see is also good.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's the best they got.
Wow. Well, I know myself. I spent a little bit of time with the National Resource Defense Fund on the phone. I challenged them when I first read this article that they were working with the Illinois legislature to keep these two leaking nuke plants open. The guy literally, I mean, and then I looked at their 990 form. Curiously enough, within the last year, they had received an $11 million contribution and a $10 million contribution. And so I wanted to know who those contributions were for. And they refused to tell me because, as it turns out, Congress just passed a law in 2000, I think, 14, that said nonprofits no longer have to disclose who gives them money.
You're
so,
kidding. I did not know about that.
No, they do not have to disclose. It's considered a violation of privacy. That's what the Congress said. It's a violation
wow.
of privacy.
Yeah,
so
well,
there was these two gigantic glaring contributions, and I called and asked them about that. And they're like, well, we're not required to tell you that. And frankly, our goal is to shut down the coal plants, and we view these nuclear power plants, yes, they're leaking. Yes, they could be long-term problems, but coal is our goal, and to close down coal is our goal, and we are going to do everything we can to do that.
Well, you know, it's probably a smart move for people like Bloomberg, who believes in nuclear energy. He gave millions and millions of dollars to the Sierra Club to fight a coal campaign. I mean, basically, he's like the majority support for the annual Sierra Club budget. And you see how much money that he's been donating. So he's keeping the Sierra Club busy on fighting coal. And
right.
and in the bailouts, at one point they had coal plants in the bailout, and the Sierra Club would not support the bailout because they had coal. Once they took the coal out of there, even though it was supporting bailing out two nuke plants, they supported that. So that obviously by the Sierra Club's actions, they're prioritizing, they're claiming that nuclear is better than coal, as in terms of lesser the evils. But I wonder, does Bloomberg even know the truth about nuclear? He seems like a smart man. But who's going to tell him? Does he
That's
know
right.
that nuclear plants have to release radiation just to operate? Does he know critical parts can't be inspected? Does he know the real dangers of? I mean, he was concerned about sugar in sodas. I mean, give me a break. If he's concerned about health, then he should be concerned about nuclear. But does he even know? If he's been told the same propaganda, and I'm sure he doesn't know about all these ticking time bomb Chernobyl cans they've got in New York and elsewhere that could start going off at any time, each with a Chernobyl's full Chernobyl's amount of radiation. Each canister has about as much radioactive cesium 137 as was released from Chernobyl and encircled the world and continues to circle the world. One canister. Now, the nuclear industry pushback on that from calling these Chernobyl cans is, oh, that's not, you know, that's fear mongering, and you know, it's not a Chernobyl reactor in a can. That's their talking point, because I've heard it over and over. That's how they're pushing back on the framing those as Chernobyl cans. They call them, well, no, it's not a reactor. It's just the amount of cesium that was released from Chernobyl, you know. So, but if that's the best comeback they've got nothing. I highly recommend people listening to this that want to do something. You start going to your city councils or educate whatever group you're in, and you tell them about how many Chernobyl cans you have in your communities, in your state. I've got a chart on San Onofre safety that lists every canister that's been loaded when they were first loaded, and I have it sorted by state. So you can see how many canisters you have in your state and when they were loaded. And
what drop down menu? I'm on your website. What drop down menu would that be under?
There's a... I mean, it's right on the home page. You can either do a word search for the word inventory or just go down. There's a handout section, and it's the very first handout under inventory handouts. And it will, you know, list them by state. But what I found is effective is you find your number about, you know, how many years they've been installed. All right. The Coburg plant, it leaked in 17 years. So let's assume... Hopefully that's worst case, even though it probably isn't, but let's assume 17 years. So you find your canister. Let's say the first canister was loaded in your state in 2003. Add 17 to that, that's 2020. So what's that about? Four-year delay?
Wow.
So let's take, if that's your scenario, you go to your city council, or preferably you meet one-on-one with somebody at your city council that you think it would be more open to hearing facts, and you start educating them, and you get them to pass resolutions, and this is they represent the safety of your community. They may not have legal authority to do things, but they are your representative, and their voice is louder than ours. So you say, hey, we've had these canisters loaded since 2003. The NRC says the Coburg plant leaked in 17 years. That means we've got about 4 years before one of these Chernobyl cans can start leaking. And the utility does not have a plan for what to do if one of these leaks. That's the worst part. I mean, you think, okay, well, you've got a radiation leak. Then what? Well, if you get about 5% of air inside that container, you could potentially have an explosion because of the materials that are inside. So then you have this Chernobyl explosion. So even if you didn't have an explosion, the utilities, they have no plan on how to deal with a leaking canister. They're just assuming it's not going to happen. The only approved NRC plan is if you have a problem canister or problem with the fuel inside, you're supposed to take that canister and put it back underwater in the pools. Well, when a nuclear plant decommissions, the NRC allows them to destroy the pools once they're empty. We're getting ready to face that at San Onofre. They want to destroy the spent fuel pool after they unload the fuel in more thin canisters, and that's the only approved method to deal with leaking canisters.
That's insane. It's like their policy is just completely I found the list that you provided on your website, which everybody should go to. It's fabulous. And I found the two that are in Oregon are in Trojan, right? They were first loaded in 2003. Now, I went up to Trojan. They've made Trojan, it's a closed facility. The activists here got that facility closed down, but it's like a park there, Donna. Like, literally, it's like a park. And what they did was they covered it over with, if I had not been covering Westlake Landfill, I would not have recognized it. It looks like a mound. They basically just covered it up with dirt. So are those containers, like, when I looked around for containers, there didn't seem to be any apparent containers there. But there are two containers there that look like they were, it says a total of 29.
Well, there's 29 of one model and then 5 of the other. So you've got 34 Chernobyls, basically.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Sitting there since 2000. They first started loading in 2003. So this just gives you the date that they first started loading them. It doesn't. So I can't say from this chart how many were loaded in 2003, but that's when they started loading them. So that's your weakest link there.
Wow.
So yeah, that's So they've got those there, and you'll notice you'll see a W or a B to the left. It's Trojan, and there's a W and a B. There's a legend on the second page. The W is the thin wall canister, the ones that are welded shut. And then if you see a B, it means they're bolted lid, which means they're about 10 to 14 inches thick. So You're not going to
Like the
have
one in
it.
New York, the ones in New York that are leaking, they have bolts on them, right?
Well, now I'm not aware of any canisters that are leaking anywhere yet. These thin wall canisters, they haven't been in use that long. The industry likes to say, oh, they've been used for decades and we haven't had any problems. Well, the ones that have been used the longest are the thick wall ones that are, they're 10 to 14 inches thick. Those are the ones that have been used the longest. They're not going to have these problems, okay? The thin wall ones, they're not aware of any problems because they can't even see if they're starting to crack. They have no way to inspect the outside to know if they have cracks and how deep the cracks are. We're only going to know after they leak radiation. And most of them have not been in use long enough where we're going to start seeing the leaks, but we're getting close to that. You can tell by these dates. Now, here's the thing about stainless steel. No one can predict when a crack is going to start. All the NRC can tell you is if a particular type of metal or vessel or container is susceptible to cracks. And the NRC has determined that yes, these thin wall canisters, stainless steel canisters, are susceptible to cracking. I mean, it's pure luck if they haven't started cracking. I mean, and you've got the things that can cause these things to crack. It could be salt air from the ocean. It could be acid rain. It could be critters that crawl on top and scratch, make microscopic scratches in the surface.
It actually could even be the Wigner effect from the radioactive contamination, where it breaks down, the radioactive contamination breaks down the metal.
Well, I like to stick to what I have the most evidence on. I mean, I don't like to speculate. And if I can't find a scientific document or an NRC document that says something that this can cause it, then I don't even go there. Okay.
Okay,
We
that's
have
fair.
enough hard evidence. Indisputable evidence that the nuclear industry and the NRC can't disagree with. And that's where we get our power, is we stick to the things we can prove with their own doggone documents, okay?
That's
And
the
that's where
stunning
you.
thing for me, Donna, is that they have the evidence and they are ignoring it themselves. Like as citizens, we have to assert the facts that they have shown. Do you know what I mean? That's the astounding part. You'd think that they would
Well,
see the same
here's the
thing.
thing. This is something I used to tell my staff when they would get frustrated about how things are. I mean, you can spend your time and energy being frustrated that the world isn't how it's supposed to be, or you can take your rose-colored glasses off, say, okay, this is how the world is. How do we win? How do we do what we need to do given this environment? What do we need to do given reality to make positive changes? So, there's only so much time and energy that we each have. So if we spend our energy getting all upset because people aren't doing their job that they should be, then we can use our energy that way, or we can say, hey, what do I need to do to change things given the reality? And what I've determined is I haven't gone high enough up. I mean, I've met with the governor's office, I've met with the California Coastal Commission, I've met with one of the current NRC commissioners, and I've met with people in the DOE, and I'm realizing I haven't gone high enough up on the chain. I mean, I haven't got to the decision makers yet. I mean, hopefully, that will help. So, and we need to get the truth out. People don't know this. Another obstacle we have is media. We've got a corporate media, and unless the Kardashian's name is attached to it, nobody's going to pay attention, probably even if they did report something. When I've gotten good media, I've been on NPR and had numerous articles and comments and news articles.
PBS, I saw you on PBS.
Yeah. You know, but, you know, not a lot of people see that. And then, so, and then what happens, and I know this happened in the San Diego market, is once we get some good press, honest press, then the president of Edison International goes and talks to the president of that media outlet, and then all of a sudden, they don't get good stories anymore. They don't
wow.
do good stories anymore. And that's the reality of what's happening. Now, I don't know if it's carrots and sticks or both that they threaten with or reward with, but it definitely, you know, and they reassign reporters. You'll get a reporter really educated on things because they don't know this stuff either. You get them educated, and then all of a sudden they get reassigned, you know. I mean, the LA Times actually eliminated the position of the person that was reporting on this stuff.
What? What do you mean? They eliminated
that position. They had somebody that regularly covered the nuclear issues at San Onofre, and they eliminated that position. They reassigned the person. They have nobody covering this issue anymore. I mean, they just, you know, nowhere, you know. So that this is the kind of thing that happens.
Have you been able to determine why the media is so vested in promoting the lies? Because they're basically lying.
Well, you know, I haven't spoken to the owners of these media outlets. That's an interesting thought. Maybe they're believing whatever it is they're being told by Edison, you know. Maybe it's just about money. But now that you mention it, I mean, I haven't spoken to any of these people that own these media outlets. I mean, you really need to be talking to the owners, not the people that work for them.
And see if they even tell you the truth about why they are doing this. Because really, it does seem to be a consistent pattern in every market across the country. Like even St. Louis, where there's a ongoing fire, right? They do cover it, but they cover it in such an odd way, the way they talk about it. You know, they're talking about it as a smoldering event, and they talk about the odor, the inconvenience of the odor. That's what they talk about, the inconvenience of the odor, not the radioactive contamination. It's a stunning, I have not been able to figure it out why.
Well, you know,
this.
you have both the Democrats and Republicans, the parties, both. Well, let's just talk about the Democratic Party. You've got the Democratic Party, not counting Bernie Sanders, by the way. You've got them basically so afraid of climate change, they've somehow been convinced that nuclear energy is actually a solution to climate change, when that's really false. But they believe that, and it permeates everything. It permeates all the decision making. In reality, nuclear energy is one of the highest consequences of failure because of climate change. So you have, you know, rising sea levels. You have more extreme weather conditions. You're not only going to have global warming, you're going to have failing nuclear reactors that nobody has a plan for how to deal with. But so the whole messaging about nuclear energy needs to be reframed to the fact of why nuclear energy is bad for climate change.
Well, for goodness sakes, just with these canisters alone, with this inventory of canisters by state, when we look at like the catastrophic events that could happen just by the rising sea levels, that's something that we know is going to happen, period.
Right.
Just by that effect, if we look at these the canisters that are buried along the rising sea levels, what's going to happen? I mean, when you talk about 1,000 Chernobyls per canister, I mean,
No, not one Chernobyl per canister.
yeah.
Yeah.
So there's hundreds of
No,
these
thousand, you got
canisters.
over 2,000 Chernobyls, yeah. Over 2,000 Chernobyl cans, and the number's growing every year.
Every year.
Yeah,
Wow.
but you don't have to wait for climate change for those canisters. Mother Nature will take care of that a lot sooner. You know, these things will start failing long before the effects of climate change. You
Wow.
know, so, I mean, there's nothing, you know, in a nuclear reactor and even in the spent fuel pools, you do have some redundancies. It's not foolproof, but there at least are some redundancies. And one thing fails, they have some kind of backup plan. They obviously, those don't always work, you know, a la Fukushima. But you at least have some, even with the pools, they have backup power, they have backup water supplies. You can actually monitor the water levels. But with these canisters, they're really the weakest link. You've got a half inch thick piece of stainless steel that could be cracking and ready to go through the wall of the container, and there's no backup for that. They can't even inspect it, and they have no, there's no redundancy for that. It's, you know, it's the weakest link we've got right now. They were supposed to have the fuel cladding, uranium pellets. The uranium pellets are put in these rods made out of this zirconium metal, and that zirconium was supposed to provide some level of protection. But what's happened is they're finding that with the that you can't count on that zirconium alloy, because they're burning the stuff in the reactor, especially the way they've been doing it the last 10, 20 years, that the cladding is subject to failure, and it can even fail after it's in dry storage. And there's no, so there's no provision to deal with that. The NRC has just been looking the other way and ignoring the fact that they know this can happen. You can have damaged fuel cladding, which eliminates that layer of protection. The other issue is inside each of these canisters is like this basket, this metal basket that has slots, and in each of these slots they put a bunch of fuel, or they put fuel assemblies in these slots. And Japan, after Fukushima, they opened one of their canisters. They have bolted lids, so they could actually open them without destroying the canister. They inspected the basket, and they determined that these aluminum baskets, which we also use aluminum in most of ours, that they weren't going to last 60 years. Now, the baskets are critical, because if the basket fails, you could have one set of fuel assembly rods falling on another and creating a, you
Oh
know,
my
a
God.
fission, yeah, creating a criticality. And so I asked Mark Lombard, the NRC. I said, "Well, wait a minute." And I asked the Southern California Edison head of that manages San Onofre. I said, "Well, what's the deal with these baskets? Japan has banned the use of aluminum baskets, and saying they can't guarantee they'll hold up for 60 years. What's the situation with ours? We use aluminum baskets here." And, you know, they just put me off. "Oh, we'll look into it. We'll look into it." They have no answer. They've designed these things where they have no idea what's going on inside. They don't know the condition of the cladding. They don't know the condition of the baskets. You know, it's just, you know, unsubstantiated hope that nothing will go wrong in spite of the evidence. And then I asked Mark Lombard, I said, "Well, what if these are partially cracked? What's the seismic rating for a partially cracked canister?" And he has no answer for that, because the answer is they don't do seismic evaluations on other than perfectly intact containers.
Oh my gosh. So you're telling me, because I know for a fact that up at Columbia Generating Station, there's a container that has a crack. Mimi Gurman reported that she
How can they know there's a crack?
there's a crack in the building.
Oh, in the building. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, at the Columbia Generating Station. They don't do size. They assume everything when they do their seismic evaluation. They're always based on you're dealing with perfectly intact materials.
Wow.
Yeah.
That to me is so irresponsible. It's really, I find it just mind-boggling and shocking that people can go to work every day and work in an environment where they're supposed to just close their minds and close their mouths and not say anything about the harm they're causing our planet.
Well, a lot of these employees, they believe what they're told by the utility, by the nuclear industry. I spoke to one of the operators at San Onofre. He showed me his training book where in one spot in the book, it says, well, nuclear radiation can be good for you. I mean, they're given propaganda and, oh, well, your body can heal from radiation, you know? I mean, they selectively choose to believe that and they ignore evidence that doesn't fit that, you know, it's unsubstantiated hope and their brain seems to filter out facts that don't fit what they want to believe. You know,
did you see that article that came out this morning? And it's come out in like the last week and a half. The nuclear industry has been able to create man-made diamonds, they say, out of radioactive waste. And I was like, and that could be used in technology. The caveat is it's still highly radioactive. So like it's still dangerous, but
it brings new meaning to the word a radiant diamond, huh?
I guess. I mean, it's like, really, they're going to start selling this as their goal. The article said that basically the goal is to, like, because diamonds are a scarcity and we have all this nuclear waste. So now that we can create these diamonds out of nuclear waste, we'll have an abundance of it. And we know we use it for technology, right?
You know, here's the scam. This is the scam. The nuclear industry is gotten by promising something they can't deliver, safe storage of nuclear waste, okay? They have no way to deliver safe storage. Most people think it's a long-term problem, that it's not safe in the long term. What people need to start saying is we've got a short-term nuclear waste problem, not long-term. Forget long-term is, you know, these things are going to fail before any long-term time period. So the activists and everybody needs to talk about this short-term nuclear waste problem. Quit using the term long-term, because we haven't even got it squared away for short-term. Now, in Europe, they use 10 to 20-inch thick wall containers with bolted lids that can be monitored to avoid leaks, can be maintained. Now, those may only be good for 100 years, and then theoretically, you can move it to another container if for some reason you need to change it. Maybe they'll be good for 300 years. I don't know how long they're going to last. I'm just trying to buy us at least 100 years by my forcing, hopefully educating people to the reality of the problem we have and trying to do something before we have all these Chernobyls going off in the United States. Right now, I'm resigned to the fact that probably at least one of them is going to have to explode before people pay attention to this issue. And I don't know how much we can afford to have a Chernobyl in our northern hemisphere in Northern California. So,
yeah, and especially considering it blows, the wind goes from west to east, right? So,
right.
I mean, maybe they're counting on it happening on somewhere on the East Coast, like New York City or something. I don't know.
They're just assuming it's not going to happen. It's like you've got that boyfriend who's not good for you, but you're so in love with it, you're willing to just ignore the flaws. And that's really how this is. It's a bad love relationship that they have, and they're just delusional, you know. And maybe money makes part of it, or they have hope that I've had you know, Mark Lombard saying, oh, well, they always figure out these problems. Don't worry, Donna. They always figure something out. You know, I mean, it's that kind of suspension of logic that that is really going on here. So,
wow. That's almost painful. That's almost even worse. That's more of an offense, to be honest. Like, these are responsible people that they're adults. He's intentionally denying the fact. I mean, and it, let's just put it to you this way. At least before you got engaged and found this stuff out, he had some plausible deniability. But now you're pointing it out to him using their own information.
No, he's the one that told me. He's the one that educated me on the problem.
Wow. So he knew. He knew. Yeah. He's just like, but they'll figure it out. It's not, don't worry about it.
Exactly. Exactly. But I mean, you know, I don't know if you've ever, you know, I mean, everybody has probably worked for the boss that you're going, okay, how in the hell did that guy get that job? You know, how did he get into management? Well, normally you only have to please one person, and that's your boss, right? I mean, a lot of times, I don't know if you've worked in big bureaucracies, but usually, you know, ones that get promoted, if you look at what they have in common, this is a vast generality, but it applies somewhat. If you can keep your boss happy, you know, that's how you get your next promotion.
Wow.
You know, it's not necessary the person that tells truth to power. You know, so you know, we've got these middle managers, and we've got these delusional nuclear engineers, and that are willing to rationalize anything for money, or just because they've got, you know, brain defects. But I haven't given up hope, and with all the horrible things that are being said about Donald Trump and all that, I think the coverage has been very one-sided. And not that a lot of these things aren't true, but there should be a balance where they talk about the problems with the Democratic side too, and they don't do that, not on the most of the major media channels. So
that's actually very true. They're giving them a complete pass on their hypocrisy.
Anyway, but maybe you have a point. Maybe going up higher, it's at the very top levels that I have not reached yet with the truth. Now, whether they will believe me, I find that, you know, because of the evidence I have, I do tend to get believed, but I don't think I've gone up high enough. Now, one of the things that this is the comeback on the canisters. Okay, this is what the nuclear industry is telling people. Well, if there's a problem with a canister, we'll just put it inside another container. They call it an overpack. So that's what they're giving as their solution. Okay, the problem with that is these canisters are so, even if they could get close to them to do it, these canisters are so, the fuel in them is so hot, so thermally hot, that right now they're stored in concrete casks or overpacks that have air vents in them so that the heat can dissipate. So how can you take a hot canister and stick it in another container that's totally sealed? Where is the thermal analysis to say that fuel's not going to overheat?
And that have they done it at anywhere? Have they even attempted that anywhere?
I spoke to Mark Lombard at the NRC, and I said, Mark, I haven't been able, because I go online and I search the NRC website. I said, and I read technical specifications for all kinds of canisters and casks. I said, Mark, I haven't found any container that's designed for this purpose, to take the failing canister and put it in another cask. I haven't found any documentation on that, anything like that's been approved or even studied. He goes, well, he says, nobody's talked to me about that. And there is none. There's not even an application for a container to do that at the NRC. They haven't even submitted an application. So it's total BS propaganda. But that's what they tell people. But, you know, that's what they told the DOE. I had the DOE give me that answer back. Oh, well, they'll put it in a in another container. And I go, well, where's the thermal analysis say it's not going to overheat? And then he doesn't have an answer for that. He didn't think, apparently, they think that through. So,
wow. But that's and they don't see this as an urgent issue to deal with.
They're willing to continue. The NRC is allows them to destroy the pools. Because they claim nothing can go wrong. Well, I submitted it. I submitted comments to the NRC, and I submitted comments to the DOE and to the ACRS, which is a technical oversight group to the NRC, pointing out these issues, and they're supposedly needing to respond to it. One of the things I pointed out to them is the documents that they are referencing to claim that nothing's going to go wrong with these canisters. That they base that they can get rid of the pools because nothing's going to go wrong when it's in dry storage. And they reference certain documents. Well, I read through those documents and found the holes in those documents and wrote that up and sent it to them. You know, your basis is flawed. The documents you're basing your decision that nothing can go wrong, they actually eliminate all emergency planning. Not that emergency planning would do much good anyway, but they eliminate emergency planning, which means the industry doesn't have to spend money on emergency planning anymore once the fuel's in dry storage, because nothing can go wrong, theoretically. So anyway, I've got documents on the home page that you can see that I've sent to the DOE and to the ACRS under the handouts on the home page that address these issues. And the NRC, Mark Lombard, at a recent meeting, he finally admitted that they have some flaws in their, you know, justification, and they're working on that. So apparently I've pushed back enough that they're having to find another way to you know, cover themselves, because
Donna, we've got about 2 minutes left in the show. It has certainly flown by. Thank you for your time. But what can our listeners do? What would you suggest the best use of their time? Because we do have some listeners who are very willing to be actively engaged. What would you suggest the actions that they could take?
Well, if any of them have any kind of a networking connection that could get me an audience with the new administration at a high enough level, you know, please contact me via my website. I need that kind of introduction, because I need to be able to talk to the Trump administration, not to these deputies she's appointing, but. So if anybody has any avenues or suggestions on how to make that connection, that's one thing. Maybe, you know, presidents of various media outlets to try and get an audience on this. The other thing is, I suggest an inexpensive way to educate your communities is via outreach to city council. You can get free media and that kind of thing. I've got a city's tab or section on my webpage. It gives sample resolutions, sample handouts that you can actually use to start educating in your community and get your cities to, you know,
letters. Well, yeah. Look, Donna, we have about 10 seconds. Please go to SantaOnofreSafety.org. Thank you, Donna Gilmore, for joining us. Put your courage feet on. Take action, you guys.